In most of our careers, we can look back to a handful of people that really shaped our direction and our path. And without them, we probably wouldn't be doing what we are. And for me, one of those people is Beverly Carmichael. Beverly was the CHRO of Southwest Airlines, Ticketmaster, Cracker Barrel, and Red Robin. And more importantly for me, she was my boss and mentor at Ticketmaster. And in this episode, we're going to talk about her career path, how that has evolved, but then really focus on our relationship. It was really interesting to be able to have somebody that has been such a instrumental part of my own career on the podcast. And so I think anybody who's worked with Beverly and knows her, loves her, she to me was, you know, really representing 21st century HR before I even knew what that was. So I am thrilled to share this episode with all of you, and we're going to get into that after a brief word from our sponsor. 21st Century HR is a podcast exploring how to build better businesses through modern people practices and approaches. It's brought to you by my firm, Amplify. Amplify provides HR executive search and strategic consulting services that help companies build better organizations. From employer brand development and execution to global talent strategies, Amplify develops custom solutions that help clients from Hootsuite to SpaceX optimize their recruiting capabilities. Amplify also hosts a new community for HR leaders called the Ecosystem. The Ecosystem was designed to bring modern HR leaders around the world together to share ideas, inspiration, and support. Learn more at amplifytalent.com. Hey everyone, welcome to the 21st Century HR Podcast. I'm your host, Lars Schmidt, and this is an episode that I've really been excited about from the moment that I launched this particular podcast. I think if I look back on my own career, there's been several pivotal moments that have really kind of shaped my path. And I think for me, none of them have been more transformative and kind of impactful on my own career than when I started working for Beverly Carmichael. Beverly is was at that time the head of HR, the chief human resources officer for Southwest Airlines. I was running global recruiting at Ticketmaster, and we brought her over to Ticketmaster and she became my boss. So this is a special episode that's really going to focus on mentorship, development, and really kind of taking listeners along a walk down memory lane from me and my favorite mentor. So Beverly, thanks so much for coming on the show. If you wouldn't mind, just give listeners just a brief introduction on your background.
Yeah, Lars. Well, thank you for having me. You are a very big deal these days, and I'm so excited to be on your show, literally. HR was not my first career. I actually started my career. I worked in the oil field. I worked for an oil company for about 8 years after I graduated from college, and then I decided to go to law school. A lot of people do that mid-career, so to speak, and I did that. I worked for a law firm for about 5 or 6 years, and then I went in-house and worked at Southwest Airlines as the head labor and employment lawyer there, and I was there for 10 years. So that's actually where I started in HR, and I have been doing HR in some form or fashion ever since.
Yeah, so that, you know, I think when you look back and you think about some organizations that are just renowned for people practices, you know, Southwest Airlines is certainly in that conversation. I think they probably led that conversation for a long time. And, you know, you had this interesting kind of path where you obviously moved from kind of a legal role into an HR role for the first time at Southwest Airlines. So what was that transition for you like when you kind of made the switch? Or I believe actually you kind of oversaw both for a while. So when your scope broadened to include HR at Southwest, what was that kind of process like for you?
Yeah, you know, actually, it was interesting. My path, as I mentioned, really wasn't the traditional one like a lot of folks. But the way I got into HR really was the product of a conversation, frankly, a conversation about development, a conversation about succession planning. the president of the company and the then head of HR had a, we just, I think we went to lunch and they asked me, you know, have you ever thought about a career in HR? And, you know, I had been at that time, I'd been a lawyer, been at Southwest for about 7 years. And the answer actually was no, I had never thought about HR. And they said, well, you know, we're just, this is really about thinking about succession. And we think that you might be a potential successor for the head of HR. And, but we want to, you know, gauge your temperature for it. And I specifically remember they said, but this is not like you have to make a decision. I remember the head of HR said, listen, I'm not leaving. Don't get any ideas. I'm not leaving.
Right.
But they did say, you know, what we have observed and gotten to know you over the years was number one, that you really have a passion for people. Clearly I was working at a company that's known for its people, that really puts its people first and doesn't just have it on the wall or whatever. They literally do put their people first. I had, and they, we talked about this, made, built relationships with people throughout the company, all at every level throughout the company. And they said, you know, these are the types of things that we look for in our executives, and frankly, the types of things that we look for in people to lead HR. And so because I didn't have to make a decision at that time, I certainly kept myself, my mind open about it. I remember even going to, as I would, you know, be in meetings and what have you, thinking about what if I was on the other side of the table? What if I was the, you know, the HR person? I thought about budget responsibility for a big department. I thought about, you know, leading a team of, at that time, I don't know, I think there were 300 or so people in HR. I thought about, frankly, being one of the critical culture ambassadors for this company that was known for its culture. And sure enough, in about 18 months, she did leave. The head of HR did leave, got promoted and went to another company. And I realized that, you know, during that 18 months, I had been thinking about making this change. When the job was posted, I applied for it. So they didn't just give it to me. A lot of people think succession planning is about promising you a particular job, but it is not. It's really about getting you to think about and preparing perhaps for the next job. And I posted for the job, I interviewed for the job, and I got the job, and I was excited. It was one of the most pivotal points in my career, and as I said, I've been in HR in some form or fashion ever since.
Yeah. Well, so let's talk about your transition over to Ticketmaster. You know, it's funny, I vividly remember when our CEO at the time, Sean Moriarty, was recruiting you over to Ticketmaster, and he reached out to me, and at the time I was running recruiting for Ticketmaster, and he asked me to interview you. And it was, you know, the first time in my career that I had was interviewing a potential boss. And I'm just curious, like, what do you remember that conversation? What do you actually remember about that?
Yeah, I remember the conversation. What do you remember about it? I do remember it, but why don't you go for it? That sounds like a trick question.
Yeah, well, I remember I was nervous as hell. You know, it's funny. So for listeners, obviously, that you know, you don't know our history. So at the time, Ticketmaster is based in LA. I had been there for 3 years, and my wife got a job in Northern Virginia. So I moved to Virginia and was actually kind of running the recruiting team remote. So I decentralized the team. Put a recruiter in Chicago and a recruiter in New York, and the rest of the team was in LA. And so, you know, one, I was nervous. I knew that you know, my geographical position was not ideal, right? Like I imagined, like, you maybe would have wanted to come in and build your own team. And certainly the idea of having the person running the core team that's based in LA on the other coast was probably, you know, not that exciting. But I just remember being really nervous and wanting to make, I was so thinking about wanting to make a good impression on you at that point, that I was, you know, I was competent. I knew what I was doing. And, you know, ultimately through that, you know, hoping to keep my job. So yeah, I definitely remember that. What about you?
Well, here's what I remember. So the first thing, and you may or may not know this part, you know, when I was talking with Sean Moriarty was the CEO at the time. And one of our conversations was that, you know, one of the things he said to me was, Beverly, we, you know, at Ticketmaster, this is a really good company, but I want it to be a great company. And he said, he also said that the people really like it here, but I want them to love it. And he said, I need an HR partner with me on this journey to make that happen. And so, first of all, that was one of the, that was music to my ears. You can imagine any HR person hearing a CEO talk like that. That was music to my ears. But the thing that I said to him in the process is, I'd like to meet some of the people on the team. You can pick who they are, but I just want to meet some people on the team. I want to know kind of where we are, how far away are we from being a company that's great and being a company where everybody really loves to work there. And I wanted to meet my team. And so, of course, you were one of the people he picked. And I do remember sitting in the room with you, and I remember you were, I don't know that I noticed that you were nervous, but I noticed that you were very, very serious.
Oh, man, and, I was nervous.
Well, I mean, and so in, really what I wanted to do, frankly, you know, call it an interview or whatever, but all I really wanted to do was to have a conversation. I wanted to get to know you. Yeah. I wanted you to get to know me. And but I remember feeling a little bit grilled. I feeling a little bit interrogated, and I felt like I wanted to do more to in that whole thing to make you a little bit more comfortable, to just let's have a conversation. And I you know, clearly you know this, and I've seen you do it, but interviews really are conversations. You know, yeah. They really should not be an interrogation, and neither party should feel interrogated. And of course, the other part, and clearly you know this, but they really are two-way conversations. And, you know, a lot of people say that, you know, a lot of hiring managers say that, that this is a two-way conversation. You know, we're interviewing each other. But all too many times, you know, in an hour interview, they'll ask the candidate questions for 50 minutes, and then they'll say, "Oh, hey, by the way, do you have any questions?
Do you have a singular question?"
We got 10 minutes. What do you want to talk about?
Right.
And that is not good. That is not good for anyone. But I do remember the conversation. I do remember liking you very much, and I remember looking forward to working with you. And it's been great all these years.
Yeah, well, so you know, you came on, and it's funny. I, for whatever reason, like, I really vividly remember your onboarding and just the impression you made on not just the team, the HR team, but the company. And you just brought this energy and passion and intelligence and, you know, humility, but also a bit of swagger with you when you came in.
Swagger.
You had swagger. You came in and, like, you just had what I really admired about you. And I think this is why the team just rallied around you, is you just came in and you're like, I think, you know, at that time, HR as a discipline, you know, wasn't always the, you know, and obviously varies from organizations, but, you know, wasn't always the most, you know, respected organization. There's a lot of personnel kind of legacy to the function. And so there's a lot of HR leaders that were kind of bookish or sheepish, and you were none of that. You just came in and owned it. You had this presence that I think immediately the team could look at and be like, okay, this is something special that we're going to be building now. And I'm just like, when you think back to your kind of first 90 days and your onboarding process, like, what do any memories stand out to you?
Yeah, well, you know, first of all, I was very excited about this opportunity. And I was aware that there would be some challenges. Frankly, that was one of the reasons I was excited about going, but I was very excited about taking on this new role. And candidly, I think, any new leader who comes to an organization, if they're not excited about it, I don't know, maybe they shouldn't be, maybe they should have taken that job, Right. So I do remember people kind of feeling that way. And it made me think, my goodness, maybe people, kind of reluctantly take jobs, but it shouldn't be that way. And the other thing that probably my most vivid memory was how welcoming this organization and the team was to me. And, that's another thing that works both ways. All too often, I think people think that when the new leader comes in, they are supposed to stand back and see what the new leader wants to do and what have you. And that didn't happen at Ticketmaster. I felt very welcomed. I felt like we were going to do this together. And I felt like, and you mentioned this earlier, I felt like I had a real onboarding. Most companies do some sort of onboarding for their employees, but far too many companies don't do any onboarding for their leaders and certainly not their executives. And I think that's a real mistake. I did get that at Ticketmaster, and I think that set us off on a very good foot. And I think that's why it all worked out.
It's funny. One of the distinct memories I have during your onboarding process, and you may or may not remember this, but we had one of the things that I think we're probably maybe 6 weeks in, maybe 8 weeks, and I was having a global offsite for my team, because we had all the recruiters and even at that point, HR business partners who oversaw some of the global operations, like they were kind of de facto recruiters, so they were part of the meeting as well. And you came in and you kind of give a talk, and then you asked us, like, what do you need? What do you need? What will help you? What can I do? What can I bring that's going to help you make the most impact in recruiting? And there was something that we'd been fighting for years, which was our vacation policy. We had a pretty strict and, normal vacation policy around, 2 weeks for most people, and you had to be there 5 years to get to 3 weeks. And, we were recruiting a lot of engineering talent, a lot of tech talent, and that just mm-hmm. wasn't competitive for mm-hmm. them. And we found we actually lost a lot of candidates because of the vacation policy. And so we said, mm-hmm. If we could, here's our wish list. We have one request. Like, if we could bump up the starting vacation package to 3 weeks for all employees, that'll make a huge difference. And I'll never forget, we proposed that. It was kind of a pie in the sky thing. We're like, probably not going to get that. Maybe she'll be able to get it done for some teams. And literally within a week, you came back and it was done. And it was, I don't remember the exact number, you might, but, hundreds of thousands of dollars in cost to make this happen. And this thing that we've been fighting for years to get done, you made happen in a week. And I'm just curious, if you remember that moment, why was it so important for you to kind of fast track and deliver that and make an immediate impact so quickly?
Yeah, I do remember that, but it really wasn't so much about that particular thing. What I remember is how passionate the team was about what they needed. And again, I think leaders often come with their plan all baked before they ever even talk to the team to ask them, what do you need? And I do remember the conversation. I specifically remember, asking, do people like, how hard is it to recruit here? Do people like coming here? Do people like, how hard is it? And I remember the team, universally agreeing that people really like to come work here. We really don't have a problem attracting talent. But I remember them specifically saying, but when we get ready to close the candidate, we kind of slink down in our chair when we have to talk about benefits and about vacation in particular. And I remember asking, well, why is that? And that's when they told me, like, well, we have this policy where everybody, no matter who you are, where, whatever level, whatever, everybody starts with 2 weeks vacation. And I remember the passion of the team, the sense, but saying to me, you know, we're hiring, you know, a lot of mid-career people, people who are, you know, very specialized skills, talent that we need. And they, wherever they are, they got 3 or 4 weeks vacation, and we've got to tell them we've got 2 weeks. And I felt the real passion, and frankly, just hearing that, I knew how that could create a real roadblock for the team. And so one of the things, as we talked about it, what I saw is that you all had all of the reasons why we needed to change the policy. And I think what you probably didn't have fully baked is just really a full business case about why this is so important and why this makes good business sense to do it. And you know, all, you mentioned all the reasons. I mean, a lot of times we do lose, we were losing our preferred candidates. A lot of times the, you know, the length or the time to hire was extended unnecessarily. And I think one of the things that I think whether, and I believe you all talked about it, but sort of this suffering a little bit of a reputational harm by just having this policy and leaving the impression that this was a company that was sort of behind the times and didn't care about being competitive. All of those things. And then to me, the worst thing, and I think I learned this later, I don't know if you all actually told me this or admitted this to me, but what I also learned was that a lot of hiring managers were just negotiating extra vacation kind of under the table. Remember? Right. I mean, that was happening. And I felt like that just did such a disservice to the HR department because it sent the message to the candidate, you know, the HR department here is out of touch or they can't get important things done for us. All of that. And I remember, you know, you all putting together the business case for our executive team and for Sean and in such a way that it was indisputable that we needed to do it. And we did do it. I remember you doing a lot of the heavy lifting to get it done. And it made a huge difference in our hiring, in our reputation externally and certainly our reputation internally, and it was terrific. And I give a lot of credit to our executive team and to our CEO for just listening to it and understanding why this was right for the business, and we made it happen.
Yeah, and I still remember like the fact that it happened, the fact that it happened at all, let alone happened so quickly. I think we all just, I mean, you had us at that point. We were like, okay, we'll run through a wall for, you know, for Beverly for getting this done for us, because it just set a tone that, how we were going to operate, as an organization and as a team. And so, you know, one of the things I'm curious about, I'd mentioned kind of in the lead in for the show that when you came in, you know, I was essentially remote, and this was, God, this is probably the, you know, mid 2000s. Where, you know, remote work wasn't that popular. That didn't, you know, didn't certainly wasn't what it is today. And not only was I remote, but I was a remote leader. You know, I had the bulk of my team was in LA, and I wasn't. And, you know, as I mentioned, like I had this running fear that that you would be letting me go because, you know, LA's got tons of talent. There's lots of great recruiting leaders in LA, and, you know, you didn't need to, you know, kind of keep my situation and having me remote. But you did, and I've never asked you, so it's going to be fun to I put you on the spot here on the podcast for the first time. But like, why did you keep me? Why did you not decide to, you know, just kind of go in your own backyard in LA and bring somebody in that could have been on site?
Wow, you mean I could have let you go and I didn't?
No. There's no time machine. It's
it's too late now. No, seriously, I do remember Sean telling me as he was sharing with me, you know, about the team. I do remember him telling me that the head of our talent acquisition team lived in D.C. and of course we were all in L.A. and I'm thinking, wow, that's three time zones away, you know, And here's what he said to me, and you alluded to it earlier. He said, you know, Lars was here, and for family reasons, he needed to move to D.C. And he said to me, I'll never forget this, he said, Lars is really good, Beverly. And before I just said, you know, no, I felt like we should give it a try. And he said, you know, but now that you're here, I want you to feel free to do whatever you think is the right thing. And, you know, candidly, it never, this may surprise you, but it never occurred to me to let you go. It never occurred to me that this wouldn't work. My mind was completely open, and I wanted to see if it, you know, if it works. I mean, it didn't matter to me. I'm not a, as I said earlier, you know, I didn't grow up with a lot of HR legacy thinking. So I don't know that I thought that that was all that odd. And I guess I've never run HR by thinking of, you know, there's just rules that you got to go by, whether they make sense or not, just because they're written down somewhere. And after watching you and your team perform, I was so impressed with the talent acquisition function at the company. I mean, we were competing for talent against the likes of Google and Facebook, and I think I know all of the tech company, Yahoo. Yeah. I mean, you guys, I would say technology talent was probably the most predominant area that we hired for. And I remember how you guys were just killing it. And far be it from me to disrupt that. I think the only thing that, I would have just wished was to just spend more time with you face to face, because I do remember this, is that, and I believe your arrangement was that you would come to LA, you know, maybe once a month for a week or so. And
I spent a week, a month out there. Yep.
Yeah. And I just remembered how much fun we all had, and how, I think I said this once time to you, I said, you know, everything just seems better when Lars is around. But I felt like that if we had the benefit of your leadership and your talent, and you were able to have the situation at in your family that worked for you, it certainly worked for me. And so I literally never even thought about, never considered letting you go and hiring somebody there. Never.
Well, I mean, obviously I'm incredibly grateful for that. And I think one of the things that, that I always kind of looking back, I think, and it's interesting, like we've become, you know, great friends. We've been in touch. We've collaborated on different projects since then. But I remember even early on, there was a point where we would always have really candid conversations around career and kind of what I wanted to do. And, there is a point in time where I was like, I want to do what you do. You know, I want to kind of go down that CHRO path. And I distinctly remember, like, project after project, you were just giving me new kind of teams, new responsibilities that that stretched me in ways that I didn't think I could stretch, or I didn't know I could stretch. And I think some of those projects at times were so daunting. I was like, what the hell? What is she doing? Like, how am I going to do this? I don't have any idea how to do this. And like, now I have this giant responsibility. I'm just like, where did that confidence? I mean, I think for me, like all of that work certainly was incredibly formative, that really put me on the path that I'm on now. And like, I'm just curious, like looking back now, where did you find that confidence in me that, that I certainly didn't have when I was thinking about some of those stretch assignments?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I did have tremendous confidence in you. I absolutely did. I think that, conversations about, what I've found over the years is people really want to have conversations about what they want to do next, what their aspirations are. And I think leaders, really need to make room and make time and make it a priority to have those conversations with leaders. And I distinctly remember you, I believe you probably initiated it, which I was very impressed with as well. But just to say, listen, you know, I'm all in on HR. I want to go as far as I can, and I want you to know it. And, you know, hopefully people have a boss like that, have someone that can have a good conversation with them and then help facilitate whatever it is they need to do to prepare for it. And so by that, probably by the time we were having that conversation, I could see that you had talent that and potential that could take you far beyond just talent acquisition. And leaders always need to be thinking succession planning. Remember my conversation? Remember what we talked about earlier, that, you know, Colleen Barrett and Libby Sartain had that conversation with me about succession and developing, man, and what are your interests? And so I was so excited to hear that from you, and I was excited to partner with you and to be able to prepare you for that. There was a lot of work to do. We had a very lean staff. There was a lot of work to do, and we wanted to take it to another level. Remember, Sean wanted it to be a great company, wanted people to love it there. And so we had a lot of work to do. So I do remember giving you many assignments and all many different areas and things that you hadn't done before, and a couple of them things I hadn't done before. And but I had confidence in you. I didn't realize that you were you had shaken confidence at any point, because you seemed to have faith in yourself. I didn't give up on you ever. And I don't think you did either on yourself. I remember, giving you some feedback on things that are new and different that you haven't done. And people do make mistakes. I think that's the other thing. Leaders have to give people room to grow, and to grow often means they're going to make a mistake, and that needs to be okay. You give them feedback, you help them where they need help, and you keep moving. And I think that's what I think you kept going, because I know I never lost confidence in you, and look at you now, you know.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I think what I remember is I replay that, I think on the talent acquisition side and the recruiting side, I was highly confident, and probably, in some cases, looking back, like, I could have used a little more humility. I thought that I was like, yeah, I mean, we did. We were crushing it. We had, we were hitting our numbers. The team was just, I loved that team. I loved every person on that team. Like, it was just an incredible group. But as you started stretching me and kind of giving me new responsibilities and, performance management, and I know we had a lot of late night crowd royal nights with the performance management at a certain moment in time.
Oh yeah, but I remember.
But I think it was those things where I'm just like, holy shit, I don't really know what I'm doing here. Like, I'm learning, and I think that because you had so much confidence in me, like, I fed off that, and I probably did a good job of masking my own insecurity because I didn't want to let you down. But I was, I would just remember, like, there were so many things. I still remember the one moment that really stands out is after the, we agreed to merge with Live Nation, and that went under regulatory review for a year. And that finally got signed. One of the things that you had given me was creating a new internal comms function. And so when the merger happened and they started actually getting the execution phase, they were like, well, we don't have an internal comms person. Oh, cool. You do. Hey, Lars, like, you're going to run internal comms for, multi-billion dollar merger.
Yes.
And that was horrifying. I was like, I'm so unqualified to do this. Like, I have no idea. And so I had a sleepless night, and then, and it all worked out. But I think a lot of it, for me, when I lost faith, seeing that you never did and that you believed in me, I think that gave me a lot of juice to overcome my own, insecurities.
Well, Lars, one of the things, and I think, got to point this out, is what people often don't realize is nobody knows everything. And honestly, if we're not learning, we're not growing, And one of the things you were great at was learning. So, you know, the performance thing, we really never had we weren't all that organized around performance management. And you used your research, you used your resources, and you learned it. Communications, that's a whole nother thing. And you didn't just shoot from the hip. You would literally go figure out how to do something. And I think that is something that everybody doesn't do. A lot of people just, if they don't know it, they just shut down, not realizing, hey, well, then go learn it. And I distinctly remember, you know, that skill and that drive in you. And I do think that that's why I had all the confidence in the world to give you all of these things. I remember something I gave you internationally because, you know, we were an international company, and literally we had ticketing operations everywhere. And I remember thinking, gosh, we're going to have to figure this out together, because it was really something that neither of us had ever done, but you got it done. And because you went to go figure it out, learned it. And as I said, got it done.
Yeah. You know, as you mentioned that, I think I remember what it was. It was the Beijing Olympics.
Yes.
We got the Beijing Olympics. So we had to develop the whole staffing plan around that. And we've never operated in China.
Yeah, exactly.
Zero experience, zero a kind of on the ground presence. So
that was interesting. That is it.
Yeah, you know, one of the things, so after the merger of Live Nation, you know, you left a little bit before that came through. I left soon after. You ended up over at Cracker Barrel as their CHRO, really kind of leading them through some transformation efforts. And, you know, here's another time where you were really instrumental in my own career, because at that point, I'd launched Amplify about a year ago. And you basically, you brought me in to be a resource for you to help build. And, you know, looking back, and even now, when I talk to, you know, some friends and contacts, and they ask me like where I've worked and my clients, and, you know, Cracker Barrel tends to stand out in a sea of primarily tech and, media companies. And so I'm curious, like, I was probably a very, non-traditional partner from their perspective. Why was it important for you to kind of, to bring me along on that journey with you?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we have stayed in touch, and I always would welcome the opportunity to work with you anytime. In fact, I think by that time, I probably tried to hire you two or three times by then, and you always said no. But I distinctly remember when we were talking about the work that I needed someone that had the skill set that you did, it really wasn't altruistic. It really wasn't just because I wanted to work with you. It was because you had something that we really, really needed at Cracker Barrel. And that was, I think the best way to describe this is that we were suffering from a little bit of an identity crisis as an employer. So Cracker Barrel hires, you know, has over 70,000 employees at that time, 44 states. And I really wanted, my goal was to make Cracker Barrel an employer of choice. When you think about all of the restaurant companies where people can work, why I wanted them to think of us first. And I felt like that, as I said, that we had a little bit of an identity problem in terms of an employer of choice. And the good news is that it really was a good place to work, but not near enough people knew it. Like I said, 70,000 employees, that's a lot of people. High turnover that happens just in restaurant companies in general. And so you talked to me about the need for developing an employer branding strategy and then building it out. And that was exactly what we needed. And it made a huge difference at Cracker Barrel. And I distinctly remember Sandy Cochran, our CEO, said this to me, and she may have said it to you too, but she said, you know, I think Lars is the first consultant that we've ever hired, she'd ever hired, that she really felt like she got her money's worth. And, wow. And listen, that's a huge compliment. I mean, a lot of companies hire a lot of consultants and doing a lot of different things, but in her mind, she felt like you were the first consultant where she actually felt like she got her money's worth. And I certainly did. It was exactly what we needed when we needed it. And it made a world of difference in the whole brand of Cracker Barrel as an employer.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate you sharing that. Actually, I didn't know that she'd given that feedback. That's definitely
Sorry.
An honor.
Oh, well, five years late. Well, whatever.
I still
better late
good.
Than never.
You still made me feel good.
Yeah.
So what is next for you? You know, when you think about, I know you've had another CHR role since Cracker Barrel, and I'm curious, like, what is next for you? What do you want to do with your career at this point?
Yeah, you know, well, I guess I'm at the point in my career where a lot of people start to think about retiring. I guess I don't think I'll ever retire in the traditional sense.
I can't picture you retired.
Yeah, no, I know, right? But I probably never will in the traditional sense. But the first thing that I'm going to do, I'm actually doing, I joined a public company board about a year and a half ago. And I love that work. It's the Leaf Group. And I love the work. I've been on, it's the first public company board, but I've been on a number of other nonprofits and professional organization boards, including SHRM, by the way. And I've been, of course, on the management team, on both sides of the board table, if you will. And I have really seen how a good board and good board members can make a meaningful and a great contribution to a company or an organization. And I'm really working hard and want to be the very best board member I can be. So I'm on that board. I'm looking at another. The other thing I'm going to do is, you know, I guess I've had probably decades of coaching and mentoring of all kinds. I actually did a stint as an adjunct professor at the University of Oklahoma, which is my alma mater, and I've done some guest lecturing at Vanderbilt in Nashville, where I live, and I was on an advisory board at SMU, and I've touched a lot of students over the years and done a lot of coaching and mentoring of them. And by the way, watching over the years, watching their careers flourish as I do gives me an awful lot of joy. But one of the things I'm going to do is actually get my certification as an executive coach. I've actually never had an executive coach all these years. I've never had one. And there have been times in my career where I actually wished I had an executive coach. So I'm going to do that. And then I guess the other thing that I'm planning to do, although I haven't started, is I'm going to write a book. I have I love to read. A lot of people love to read. And there are a number of books that have made a tremendous impact on my life and my career. And I think I've got a personal and professional story that I'd like to share more of. And I hope that, you know, it'll be helpful, meaningful, and maybe a little entertaining for folks. So I've got a few things that I'm working on. You know, we'll see.
Well, knowing you, I think the book is going to be all those things and more. So I can't wait to read it. When I think about, obviously, the name of this podcast is 21st Century HR. I think if, you know, listeners know me, like, that's, you know, a lot of my work, whether it's writing, speaking, you know, this, they all kind of connect back to this idea of modern HR and 21st Century HR. And as I mentioned, you know, you were my first, you know, your leadership, your style, your approach was my first real kind of deep introduction to what I kind of now view as 21st century HR. So I'm curious from your perspective, like, how would you define 21st century HR?
Yeah, you know, I whatever label you give it, Lars, I think that what HR must do is evolve. I mean, this is not your mother, your father's, your grandmother, father's HR. I mean, think about, we talked about a couple of things just in the last 30 minutes or so, you know, working remotely and vacation policy. I mean, those two things are, that with those, doing those things in 2005 or six when we were doing and we're really cutting edge, they're not even a thing today. You know, I mean, most companies, you know, it's just get your work done and they've just dispensed with their vacation and PTO policy. Not most, but many. Remote working is what, I mean, that's what people do now. So that means HR has got to evolve. Imagine HR, you know, still thinking the way you thought 10 years ago or 20 years ago, whatever, just because some HR book says this is what you do. I think that more and more companies, I think, and this is good, but more and more companies are realizing that, I mean, it is, there's the, you don't, you get, you do what you do through the people in your organization. And you've got to create, you got to hire the right people, and you've got to create a culture and an environment where they can do their best work, where they enjoy it, where they feel valued, respected, treated fairly. And whatever that means, I do think that HR should be at the front and the thought partners to make sure that those things can happen to get the work of the company done. And it does mean evolving and not being stuck. And it does mean opening your mind. It means listening to your people. You know, one of the things, I didn't mention this, but I thought about it earlier. One of the things that I believe, one of the leadership skills that I believe are the most underutilized and underrated are listening skills. I think leaders often think they've got to be the ones doing all the talking. They've got to have all of the answers. When in fact, listening is one of the most important things that has to be done. People have something on their mind. They have something they want to say, and they want to know that their leader is interested, that their mind is open, and they're going to be heard. And I think that is what 21st century HR or whatever, again, whatever label you call it, HR's got to be at the front of making sure that people have what they need to get the work of the companies, the work done in the best possible way.
All right, Bevel, I think you've definitely instilled that in me. I mean, this isn't just talk for you. This is how you live your role, your leadership. It's what you instill in your teams. And I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's been awesome to kind of go down memory lane and riff with you a bit. But I also just want to thank you. You know, you've had such a tremendous impact on my career. And I can easily say I definitely would not be doing what I'm doing now without your kind of direction and your leadership and just your belief in me and the confidence you had in me. So thank you. I can't thank you enough for that. And I just want to let you know I'm grateful.
Well, you're very welcome. You inspire me, Lars. And, you know, I'm in awe of what you're doing. I just so appreciate what you're doing to advance our profession. And I could not be prouder of you. So it's all good.
Thanks for listening to this episode of 21st Century HR. If you want to hear more episodes like this or read stories from the 21st Century HR Fast Company series, go to 21stcenturyhr.com. And if you want to make your podcast just a little more awesome, be sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, or whatever podcast platform your ears desire. You'll find all the subscribe links on the website. And if you enjoy the podcast, do me a favor and share it with your peers, your network, your boss, and your CEO. Help me get the podcast into the ears of anyone who wants to know what HR and recruiting looks like when done really well. They'll thank you for it, and so will I. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next episode.